All right, here he is. He'll be answering your questions in a moment. Dennis Stewart, the host of Health Naturally, mate, looking just nice and relaxed. They're ready to get into it today.
You're looking at my nice vest.
You've got your cricket whites on almost, off-white.
My dear wife made this vest for me, and I proudly wear it.
As you should do, as you should do. Now, look, I know you want to leave the topic at the moment. You're looking at the three leading American herbs, the slippery elm, the golden seal, the echinacea. But you'd like to focus today on female infertility. Now, obviously there's a bit to talk about in terms of how herbalism relates to that, but many would say, hang on, Dennis, do we need to be going down that road? Because IVF is very much in that space. So in short, how will we tackle that today?
What I'll be doing is pointing out that there is a role for clinical modern herbal medicine as a complementary therapy in dealing with female infertility, particularly where it's what we call a functional condition. That is, where there's no real explanation of why the woman is not falling pregnant, although there are some exceptions to that. In that role, herbs often shine and give to women, as I've proven in my many years, a neglected but useful second option to try.
All right, we will have a look at that. So today, there's just a couple of blokes just talking about, you know, IVF, female reproduction, all of that. What are you reckon?
I'll not go there, Mark.
All right. We just need the Prime Minister, so we have the trifecta for this week.
I knew you were going in that direction.
All right. 4921 6216.
Terrible.
All we need now is some Health Naturally on 2NURFM. All right, let's get into it. G'day, Lillian at Seaham. What is your issue with inflammation for Dennis today?
Good afternoon, Dennis.
Hello, Lillian.
How are you?
I'm very well.
Great. I have a question that's a little bit possibly difficult.
Okay.
I cannot use anything that has like NSAIDs, like non-steroidal.
Non-steroidal, yes.
Yes. And I have tried naturally, as in turmeric and some ginger,
yes.
And
yes.
Unfortunately that doesn't help my issue.
Yes.
Do you know of anything else I could possibly try, as I would like to keep it natural?
Of course. Look, I would suggest that as a starting base, you consider two herbs that are very, very well known, particularly in Europe, but also here to a degree. These are two of the older herbs that I have great confidence in and harness them in my own practice of herbal medicine. Now, the first one is the herb willow bark. Now, willow bark is perhaps the oldest known herb with useful analgesic and anti-inflammatory characteristics. If you were to Google the British Herbal Pharmacopoeia and look at the monograph there for Salix alba, that's the technical name for willow bark, you will find a very confident support of what I have just said. And willow bark should not be equated with aspirin. That's where people get it wrong. My information or my understanding is there's a significant difference between the crude herb willow bark and, say, a derivative of it, such as salicylic acid. So principle number one, I see that as a useful remedy. Very inexpensive and can easily be made into what we call a herbal decoction. That is a water-based preparation. But in conjunction with that, there is a well-known, probably one of the best-known northern European herbs known as silver birch. Now, silver birch does grow here, but it's usually grown as an exotic, not for any sort of cultivational purposes. But silver birch is still used very much in northern Europe, particularly in Scandinavian countries. And it was interesting, listeners will be interested in this, that during the Second World War in Germany, the German medical profession became very, very scarce in their supply of what we'd refer to as anti-inflammatory medication. So what they did was fall back on their traditional medicine system and began to use a combination of willow bark and silver birch. Now, this was so successful that in an article written by a Scandinavian doctor, Dr. Wehrland. In the back of that text, there's an interesting section dealing with this combination where he makes the statement that it was in fact interpreted and seen medically at that time, in a time of great scarcity in Germany, that that combination of willow bark and silver birch was very, very effective in helping people get through that terrible time where there was no resort to conventional pharmaceuticals. Now, that led me to develop a tea based on silver birch and willow bark, and it is popularly used by many of my clients and patients. It is simple. It is domestically prepared as a hot infusion or decoction. It's not that bad to take, although very few herbs are nice to take. But I would see that. That, in my opinion, would be something to seriously think about. A combination of an arthritis tea based on silver birch and willow bark in the right proportions. And I have a paper of it, or paper on it, at my rooms in New Lambton. If you want to procure it, it's free of charge, as it is for any of the listeners who are interested in things that I talk about.
Fantastic. Well, I'll certainly give it a try and let you know.
Google it first and get confirmation, and I think you'll find that what I've said is spot on. And as I've said, it's easily procured as a crude dried herb with a silver birch, the two of them, boiled up together and taken in the right proportions. Now, I emphasise this because this is not just a retail product. This is a product that you will make depending upon dosage factors and the proportion of each in the dosage. So unless you're using that, and this is why the paper that I've suggested, it might be useful for you to pick up if you can't get it on the when you Google it.
All right, best of luck with everything, Lillian. I'll tell you what, Dennis, you never know what's going to come out of those healing rooms of yours, do you?
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, you got papers? Yeah.
I wrote that paper particularly for this purpose. It's interesting, there was a guy that influenced me. Mm. Mate, there have been many people that have influenced me. Interestingly, most of them from the European tradition, and I think even though I mentioned a lot of American herbs, and rightly so, it was a lot of the European left field, if you like, medical profession. And one of them was this chap called Wehrland. And he was a genius and wrote a book called Rebuilding Health. And I used that book that I purchased in Sydney when I was a practicing engineer. I spent a lot of time in the Theosophical bookshop when I probably shouldn't have been. And I picked up his remarkable book that I've mentioned, Rebuilding Health. And I was suffering bad eczema at that stage and was fed up with steroid creams and this and that. And he had a protocol in that based on Scandinavian dietary and herbal management. And to this day, I consider that as one of the breakthrough things that got me into the system of medicine.
And would this be during the protest era for you?
That was a period when I was really...
You were very engaged.
That's a nice term. That's a nice term. Probably some would use a bit more radical, but one goes through stages in one's life.
Yeah, we do. And Yvonne, you are first up this time around for West Wall's End. Yvonne, there is a white tongue fungus on the tongue. What's going on there, Yvonne?
I've had it for about 13 weeks now, and I've been to the doctor three times. I was on Nilstat for three bottles of that, which didn't work. And then I was on fluoroconazole.
Yes.
I had one tablet for 4 weeks. And all with fungal in lozenges.
Yes.
And nothing's working. So my doctor said it was a gut problem.
Yes.
And I've been taking probiotics, Persillium husks and slippery elm.
Yes.
They're
useful. Fine. And I think your doctor was on the right track there, but what I would be suggesting is two things. One would be following on from his gut interpretation, and
yes.
I would suggest a trial on a spectrum of what are called digestive enzymes. Now, they have a significant role to play in improving, if you like, gut chemistry and a well-functioning upper gut particularly, I'm talking about the stomach, the initial stage of digestion, can frequently reflect itself in an improvement in the tongue characteristics if you alter the chemistry with, say, some digestive enzymes, which are harmless, inexpensive, and stimulate a better digestive environment. So if you haven't done that, I would suggest you go to your health food store or to your pharmacy and get some digestive enzymes. They're readily available, and as I come back to the point, that they are very safe. The second thing that I would, and what I have found, I'll go back to that, what I have found is that a period of time on digestive enzymes tends, now I know this is a bit controversial, but it tends to re-establish, if you like, a gut chemistry which works against fungal states. Now, that's my personal view. Now, secondarily, you need to get hold of the herb sage. Now, sage is frequently mentioned on this program. It has multiple benefits. One of the benefits is particularly to do with various pathologies that occur in the mouth. And one of them, I would suggest, a fungal condition may well yield itself to the very strong, astringent and mild antimicrobial activity of using sage as a mouthwash.
Oh, okay.
So again, we come back to things that are inexpensive. Sage is not a nasty tea to take, but it is purely, in this case, meant to be taken as a mouthwash a couple of times a day. That in conjunction with the digestive enzymes, I think that's a good starting base.
Okay, well, I'm willing to try anything at this stage.
Let me just ask you a quick question.
Yes.
Are you on many pharmaceuticals?
I'm on blood thinners. I've had two TIAs and blood clot. Yeah. And I'm on, Nexium.
You're on Nexium, are you?
Nexium, yes.
We'll discuss that with your doctor.
Yes.
I'm not in any way at all questioning his skills, far from it. But what are known as PPIs, that is a spectrum of drugs that are used to address acid states of the stomach, are not as popular as they used to be. And I will not elaborate on that, but perhaps it could be seen as a byproduct of that group of drugs. I won't mention E1 in particular.
Okay.
But mention that to your doctor.
I will.
Because it's important that if you go off them, you need to do so with his approval, because he's obviously placed you on them for a reflux condition or something like that.
Right. I'm on two other medications, Cresto.
Yes.
And the other one is a, Mirabegron. It's for bladder.
Look, I've got nothing against any of those medications. Listeners will know that over the years I've expressed my reservations about statin medication. But in your case, with your history, it is necessary.
Okay.
But outside of that, I think that the PPI factor does warrant a discussion with your doctor. But outside of that, the two simple things that I've mentioned are worthwhile trying.
All right. Well, I'm going to go out now and buy them.
Well, give it a go and come back and tell us you've got a tongue as rosy as could be.
I certainly hope so, yes.
Okay.
As we continue with Health and Actually, Dennis, we're putting you to work today, aren't we?
We are. Very good questions.
All right.
Very sensible ones.
Absolutely. G'day, Doug at Nelson Bay. There is some skin blemishes you'd like to talk to Dennis about. What's the story, Doug?
Yes. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Doug.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Look, I have a skin problem, a tough one for you. I don't expect a magical solution because no doctor or chemist seems to have one. But I've got a very common complaint. I'm over 70. Australian sun has knocked me around. I have what they call solar keratosis.
Yes.
They come up like a little pimple, and they get a scab on them, and they get you pick them, you can't help it, you try not to, and then they get a bit of a scab or a bit of a scar, and then they last about 12 months and they finally go. Some, most times they disappear after a year or so.
Yes.
It's so annoying, and I have been to the skin specialist. I've got an appointment for next Monday weekend for my annual checkup.
Good.
And they do burn them off sometimes, but they normally come back. I'm wondering if there's any natural solution or that you might be able to suggest that might give some help.
Doug, I really haven't, because I have spent too much time in the sun myself as a very aged Novocastrian with a history way back of laying in the sun, front and back. Usually in those days we used to smother ourselves with olive oil and see if we could get a tan that would make an islander very jealous of us. But also in recent times I have had a number of lesions a bit more serious than that, a basal cell carcinoma, and two of them removed in recent times. Now, I know the lesion you're talking about. I used to sometimes refer to them as barnacles. But look, what I would suggest is, look, stay with your dermatologist. Stay with it. These things at our stage, and I'm much older than you, these things at our stage in life are best managed, as you would expect me to say, by our good specialists, keeping it under control. There is nothing that I'm aware of that would be of any significant use to you.
Well, sorry to give you such a tough one.
Oh, no. It gives me the opportunity to caution my listeners about not doing some of the silly things.
We did.
Did we ever? But they were good times, weren't they? They were good times.
Lying on the beach, trying to get the suntan.
And perhaps if we'd have been a little bit more aware, we would have taken one or two more precautions, but knowing young people, it's most unlikely.
All right. Well, nice talking to you anyway. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Doug.
Yeah, a couple of blokes, Dennis and Doug, just hanging on the beach.
I can remember it like with yesterday. Newcastle Beach was the favourite one. My father, was very disturbed if he knew that we went into the surf as young guys, because he grew up in Stockton and constantly reminded us of the danger of sharks, having seen two people in Stockton actually mauled by sharks in the surf. Mm. And inevitably, of course, we would disobey him. And in those days, you'd get more than a clip in the ear. So we spent a lot of time at the baths.
As youngsters did and as parents did. It's just how it is, how it was. G'day, Andy at Blacksmiths. Plantar fasciitis is on your mind. What's happening, Andy?
Good to talk to you, Dennis.
Thank you, Andy.
Yeah, I'm another old-timer with perhaps a difficult one for you. But
you weren't on the beach as well, were you, with Dennis and Doug?
Not on the beach, no. I sort of have developed a foot ache and pain over the last few weeks. Talking to various people, I'm pretty sure it is plantar fasciitis. I haven't been to see any sort of podiatry assistance, but I do know that there are potential inserts and that sort of thing that you can get. However, I was wondering if there's anything in the herbal world that could help with this sort of pain and problem.
Look, first thing that I would recommend, Andy, is that you get it properly investigated. And it might interest you to know that at the end of this program, I'm making my way to my podiatrist here in Newlampton. The clinic there does a good job for me. I'm a great fan of podiatry, and I think that you would be well advised, either through your doctor or independently, as you're entitled to get a clarification of the condition. Sometimes this condition asserts itself by the development of spurs. Now, I have, interestingly, over many years, found that a combination of two minerals. Now, I mention this not to say this is the treatment for plantar fasciitis, but where there is a spur condition involved in the context of plantar fasciitis, I for years have used a Blackmore recommendation that is not well known, and that's based on two minerals, the first one being silica and the second one being sodium phosphate. Now, those minerals are not that readily available. They come in what are called celloid forms, which are readily available from naturopaths and pharmacists that stock, and from herbalists who stock this range of products from Blackmore's celloids. And I'm a little bit sad these days that they are not as well known as they should be. They used to be the backbone, the celloid substances, for many practitioners in their treatment of various illnesses. I still use them and find them very, very effective in many conditions. They're harmless, they're inexpensive, and sodium phosphate and silica, I can talk about instances where, without a doubt, this has validated the taking of those minerals in what's called a celloid form. So for what it's worth, and I'm not saying this would necessarily apply to you, but the use of them is harmless. I come back to the point that they're inexpensive. You would have to see a practitioner, a naturopath, a herbalist, even a doctor or a pharmacist who stocks what are called the Blackmore celloids to get those two minerals abbreviated SP96 and S79. They're the codes associated with those two products. But I come back to the point, Andy, look, get a little bit more clarification. You might waste a lot of time by not having it looked at and an opinion given on it. But having said that, even if it does lead to podiatry management, which probably will, it wouldn't hurt to consider those two minerals in the celloid form.
All right. Thank you so much, Andy. More calls on the way with Health Naturally. And Dennis Stewart, we'll get to Louise in the next couple of moments. And if you have a question for Dennis today, 49216216. I'll tell you what, Dennis, I think you'll be holding that topic over at this stage till next week. What do you think?
I think we might.
All right, we'll see how we go as we continue with Health Naturally on 2NURFM. A little bit more of Health Naturally with Dennis Stewart and Louise from Edgeworth. Thanks so much for your patience. There's a pins and needles problem there, Louise.
Yes, Mark. Good afternoon, Dennis.
Hello, Louise. Tell me about your problem.
Probably originated from my back. I hurt my back.
Yes.
And I had pain down my right leg.
Yes.
But my back's fine now. I do exercises and everything
good.
For that.
Good.
But pins and needles in my feet, both feet.
Yes.
And sometimes cramping in my toes.
Yes.
Which very, very painful. I've been to the doctor.
Yes, good.
And the only thing she can help me with is tablets that make you sleepy, and I don't want to take them constantly because I've got to function and drive and things.
Of course you do.
And I only do it of a night when I can't get to sleep.
Right. Look, well, I'm going to suggest something simple. It may be useful, may not be useful, but it's harmless as far as I know and not going to clash with anything you might be taking from your good doctor. What I would suggest you do is look at a couple of herbs that are known to promote improvement in blood flow to the peripheries. Now, this may not be just associated with blood flow. It also could obviously involve some neurological dysfunction, but any herbalist would always recommend that anything related to the feet particularly and cold symptoms of the feet, regardless of their cause, may get value from doing a simple thing like, for instance, taking some capsules of ginger and taking them regularly. I would suggest certainly at night time, one or two of them. And people don't realise that there are a group of herbs whose warmth or hot characteristics are renowned for their benefit in promoting improvement in circulation and certainly helping overcome the symptoms of coldness. Ginger is one of them, but there is an American herb that frequently is combined with ginger. This would probably have to be prescribed by a pharmacist or a herbalist, or try to get it independently if you can. But it's a herb that I don't mention that much because it's not always applicable. But the herb prickly ash, if you note that, of all the herbs in the British Herbal Pharmacopoeia that has a profound reputation for peripheral circulatory benefit, it is that herb prickly ash.
Okay.
And I remember treating a delightful lady for quite a few years from New Lambton, a very elderly lady with a background herself in nursing. And that combination of prickly ash and ginger, particularly in cold weather, enabled her to have a better sleep and resist even some of the cold weather symptoms that she experienced in a worse condition than what she otherwise would. Ginger, prickly ash, ginger on its own perhaps in an encapsulated form. And for the cynics out there, well, you can be cynical. Something as simple as that has helped many people that I've made that recommendation to.
And where can I get them?
Go to your pharmacy first.
Yep.
If you can't get any of these things, well, obviously you can always get them from my rooms, but I always say see the local practitioner or pharmacy first. If you can't get any success there, I'm able to help.
Thank you so much, Louise. Our last call for the day, we will squeeze you in. Anne at East Maitland, you have a dry eye situation, Anna. What's going on?
I do, just constantly watery eyes. Hello, Dennis. How are you?
I'm very well, Anna.
Yeah, just the wind, the cold winds and screen and things like that. Yeah, my eyes just... I've been to the optometrist.
Yes.
I've tried eye drops. I've tried ointments. He's suggesting lasers, getting them lasered, but I was just wondering if there's something naturally I could take.
Anna, how old are you, if you don't mind my asking?
59.
Okay. And you have no underlying health problems?
No.
No Sjogren's syndrome or anything like that?
Nothing, no.
Okay. Look, this is an off-the-cuff recommendation, but it's a good starting base. The herb known as bilberry has a broad-spectrum benefit on eyes, particularly eyes that are prone to allergy, glare, and other things that most people can sort of handle. Now, Eyebright is usually combined with other substances, but even on its own, bilberry is usually prescribed with other substances, but even on its own, it's a good starting base. Google and you'll find that I'm right in what I say there. But in Europe also, a long-standing remedy has been the herb Eyebright. And it frequently is combined with bilberry for a multitude of what might be referred to as functional conditions, not characterised necessarily by any pathology. Those two herbs are readily available, inexpensive, are worthwhile giving a try. But over the years, many of my listeners who have had dry eyes have claimed great benefit from supplementing their diet with encapsulated fish oil. So
I take fish oil.
Good. Make sure you take it in the right level. But that's a starting base. Add to it those two remedies and see how you go with it.
Best of luck, Anna from East Maitland. Dennis, we've got to put a full stop on it. We've run out of time. You've almost worked overtime this week.
We did. You made me work too hard, Mark.
All right.
I'm exhausted.
And you don't ever get to go straight home. It's off the podiatrist next.
Thank you, Mark.
Hopefully you'll get into that topic next week, okay?
We will indeed.
All right. Thank you very much. That's Dennis Stewart wrapping up Health Naturally for today at 2NURFM 103.7.